Welcome to the big show, a holiday edition of the Dory Monson Show. And we thought this would be a good time to revisit some of our favorite segments from the last couple of weeks. You know, the segment's so nice, we got to air them twice. So we'll do that. We've just a lot of great stuff from the last couple of weeks. And man, we have a busy week ahead of us. Of course, Wednesday is Inauguration Day. There are still all of these rumors, these reports that there could be, and I hope and pray that none of this is true, but that there could be some discord in D.C. and across America on Wednesday with the handover of power. And we'll be on the air live every day the rest of the week to chronicle whatever may happen as we transition to a new prez. And here in our state, man, we are keeping an eye on what has shaped up as the most radical legislative session in the history of Washington State, with an income tax being proposed. Unconstitutional, yes, but they're still trying to push that. And then lots of other taxes and social justice agenda items that really are not going to do a whole lot of good. And that's where I get back to what today is all about. And that is doing things not for show, but because they actually accomplish good. And if you want to take a chunk of your day and have the most awe-inspiring experience, just listen to the entire I Have a Dream speech. The family is pretty tight about letting us play it on the radio. But just listen to the entire speech. If you make a living with the spoken word, as we do here, it is one of the most beautifully crafted, passionately delivered, powerful speeches you will ever hear. And that would be a wonderful way for you to spend part of your day. After 3 o'clock, don't take time away from our show. Take it away from the Tom and Curly Show, for crying out loud. But sit back and enjoy. We have a lot of segments that we wanted to share with you once again as we get a little holiday ourselves here on MLK Day 2021, the Dory Monson Show. Well, as we deal with this coronavirus and so many other issues in our world, I was talking to my mother-in-law last Sunday, and she's 84 years old, and she's so upbeat, and she said, well, we're living through history. And it struck me that it's a good idea to talk to people who have lived through a lot of history. I got an email from a woman named Brenda, and she said that I should talk to her dad, a World War II veteran who has seen a lot and lived a lot. His name is Philip Solman, and he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Phil, it's great to talk with you, sir.
Thank you, Dory. Good to talk to you.
You're 96 years old, I'm told. Is that right?
I'm almost a Valentine's baby. February 15th, I'll be 96.
96 coming up, okay. And you served in World War II, Phil?
I did. I served with the 104th Infantry Division. We fought in Europe, France, Belgium, Holland, and Germany.
What sort of missions did you take part in?
Well, we were combat soldiers. We all deserved the infantry badge, which goes only to soldiers who actually fought the Nazis during the Second World War.
My good, how old were you when you went off to fight, Phil?
I was just a kid. I was 18 years old when I got inducted, and I think I was 19 when I went overseas. And our division, the 104th, fought for 195 consecutive days.
Oh my goodness.
We were lucky enough to miss the Normandy invasion by 3 months. We were still in training. There was other divisions that had more experience than our division.
Okay.
But We got to Europe. We got to landed in Cherbourg, France, in September of 1944.
Were you aware at the time? Because what I'm always so in awe of, Phil, is you were just a bunch of kids, you know, 18, 19 years old, and your mission was a simple one, to go and save the world from Hitler. I mean, that is a pretty big deal. Were you aware of the importance and the gravity of what you were a part of?
No. Honestly, Dory, I was not too young for that. I was only interested in girls and having fun at the time.
Tell me about some of the battles you did engage in.
Well, like I say, we landed in Cherbourg, France. We sailed directly from New York Harbor, I think it was New Jersey, in one of the biggest convoys that the United States ever sent over to Europe. And we sailed directly to Cherbourg, France, to clear that port so we could get supplies closer to the troops. Instead of landing on the beach, we landed in Cherbourg, and there was still a little fighting going on there. Shortly after that, I'd say within, we were trained, you motorized, you know, on a troop train to Brussels. We relieved a Canadian army or division that was fighting on the edge of the Belgium-Holland border.
Were you scared at the time, Phil? Or, I mean, I remember when I was 18, and even your generation, even more so, were you just too young and tough and full of bravado to be scared?
Scared out of my pants, believe
you were.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. After...
What did you leave behind when you enlisted? What was your life like as an 18-year-old kid in America before you enlisted?
I was a fairly handsome young man, like 18, 19 years old. I went to Garfield High School, and I left a legacy there. I was on the track team and won the All-City 440-yard dash in 1943. That's when I graduated.
Okay.
And looking forward to maybe going to college, or maybe working, or just take it day by day, see what happens.
Yeah. But all of a sudden, you're in the middle of hell.
But I was drafted, right.
Yeah.
Right. Didn't have a chance to think about what would have been, what could have been.
But you guys did it. You saved the world. You saved humanity. And like I said, it's hard to imagine the importance, the enormity of the mission you were on. But that's what you guys went and did.
Yes. Yes, no question about it. when we read the reports and the news, you know, the newspaper clippings and what have you, of what we did, we didn't realize. But we had a job to do, and we did it without question. And, God, I don't know, in Holland we cleared the... like I say, we relieved this Canadian outfit. We cleared the port of Antwerp so supplies could be landed closer to the front lines. Was engaged in the Battle of the Bulge. I'm sorry. I get a little weepy at times thinking about these things.
And explain, it's been almost 80 years, Phil. Why do you Why do you still get so emotional 80 years later?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel that I shouldn't be here. I was too lucky. 195 days of combat, somebody shooting a rifle or a pistol or artillery shells at me, personally at me. And I figured if I could live through the first day of engagement of the enemy, I'm going to make it through. No question about it. But that's the kind of guy I am. I can get weepy at thinking about my youth, for example. Just I'm a soft-hearted guy.
I hear that. Well, you're making me weepy just talking to you. It's such an honor for me to be talking to you. So you came home, you guys successfully saved the world, and what was your life when you came back to America?
Well, let's see. I think within a year, I was married. I got married too young. And the woman I married was too young, but she bore me three children.
Yeah.
Great kids. And the marriage lasted 20 years, but it was a hellish marriage.
Okay.
I was divorced for about 6 years, and then I married the love of my life, and we've been married now for 45 years.
Oh, my goodness. God
so,
bless you.
I feel like, you know, I got lady luck on my left shoulder and God on my right shoulder, and they looked after me.
Yeah.
I never got a scratch in 6 months of combat. I never drew a drop of blood.
Wow.
Shaving or from the enemy.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, be at the right place at the right time. That
I
was...
guess so. Well, what an honor for me to talk with you, Phil. I know that we've lost a lot of your brothers who were there with you, and I think it's important. So what's your take? Let me just ask you. When you look at what's going on in the world today, whether it be this virus that's locked down so much of the world. We've got an impeachment going on this week. We have 18-year-old kids who can't see beyond the tip of their nose and don't have any selflessness like your generation had to have. What's your view of the world today?
I don't like the world as it is today, Dory. I feel sorry for the young kids, the children that have to take school with a computer,
yeah.
And the high school kids that do the same thing, and we can't go to restaurants, we can't go here, we can't go there. My wife and I have been like quarantined here in our house for since February, since it all started, and very boring, to be exact.
Yeah.
But I'm not the kind of person that needs excitement. I'm very happy in my home. And Dory, if I were to go tomorrow, I would leave no regrets.
No, you've lived quite a life, it sounds like, Phil.
It has been a very exciting life and a good life. Yep.
Yeah.
I've had good people around me. My children, Brenda, for example, and her sisters.
Yeah.
My children, they're just princes. They couldn't be better. They're like a swarm of bees around us. So.
Well, I'll tell you what. You're still making lives better because I and my listeners, we are much the richer for having talked to you and heard your stories today, Phil. It's
thank
it's quite
you.
Quite
Thank
an
you,
honor.
Dory. It's been a pleasure talking to you, too.
Okay, well, I'd love to stay in touch. Let's not make this the last time we talk, okay?
Okay, all right. I go for that.
All right. God bless you, sir.
Thank you, Dory.
Okay, thank you, Phil.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That is Phil, went to Garfield High School. Whew, I am emotional talking to him. Went to Garfield High School, went and fought as an 18-year-old in the European theater of World War II. Philip Suhlman, and what a life. So just wanted to share that with you. Actually, I wanted it for myself, too. I needed something like that this week. All right. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. You are listening on this holiday to some of our favorite segments from the last couple of weeks. I know most people, although we have a shocking number of people. They're called P1s. They listen to every minute of every show, every day. They know more about my life than I know about my life, which is really cool and really frightening all at the same time. But there are a lot of people who have to tune in and out because you are doing some other things with your life. And so we've put together some of our favorite segments. Back live tomorrow. Enjoy this MLK Day edition of the Dory Monson Show. Well, we have been spotlighting all of the businesses, not all of them, because there is a growing number, but so many of the businesses that have made a really tough decision because the state has kind of a guillotine over their heads. If you're a restaurant or a gym owner, shut down or we'll fine you over $100,000 in some cases. And these business owners are saying, we can't survive. We've put all our lifeblood into building an enterprise, paying taxes, creating jobs, and we're over a barrel. It's a tough place to be. Up in Burlington, I love our listeners up there in Skagit County. A Burlington restaurant has made the tough decision. Nick Crandall owns Railroad Pub and Pizza, and he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Nick, good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You are in Skagit County, right? You're not still Snohomish County up there in Burlington.
No, we're Skagit. We're about an hour north of Seattle.
I know exactly where you
Skagit
are.
County.
I had a lot of battles when I was a high school coach at Burlington Edison High School, believe me. okay, so walk me through. You heard what I said in introducing you. This is a heartbreaking situation for restaurant owners to be in. Kind of walk me through your decision-making process as you decided to open up to indoor dining. And we can talk about that in a couple of minutes because what you have is much safer than an outdoor tent. But
I can give you the rundown.
Yeah, walk me through this.
So I got two restaurants. One's called the Trainwreck Bar, and then the other one is called the Railroad Pub and Pizza. Now, the Trainwreck Bar is built right on the property line, so I'm not able to do any type of outside seating. I tried to do the to-go service for about a week, and it just killed us. And we're a super popular place there, and so I'm like, you know, I'm going to shut down and focus on the Railroad Pub and Pizza, open up my garage doors, and plenty of airflow going through here, and everything's been going pretty good. I got contacted by the liquor board, and the liquor board said, you know, we had a complaint, but you're legit to stay open. I said, cool. And then I got a letter from L&I on Thursday that we had to sign for. And they just kind of said, I'm not able to be open. This is a structure, not an outside dining because I don't have 2x4s and tarps. So that's maybe what they want. So I was like, wow, this is weird. So I didn't really know if this is a real letter, so I sent it over to the liquor board because I feel like they had my back. And so the liquor board had it, and they contacted me on Monday saying, hey, we talked to L&I, you're not able to stay open. So I said, okay. So that's when I kind of did my little deal on the Facebook.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of funny, the train wreck, I'm like, you know what, I gotta beat it. I gotta get my doors open. So I opened up the train wreck. I built I got an approval letter to shut the street down. I built this shelter outside to do business at the train wreck, and I opened that up on the 1st, and I got a letter on the 30th to shut down the railroad. I'm just like, man, the stress, and like, you know, I got 70 employees, and it's just like, you know, I got great employees, and I'm trying to keep people employed because, you know, the crappy part is when you shut down, these employees, they're ready. They're starting to wonder about their careers. And then I'm worried about losing people by laying them off, you know. I'm trying to hold on to these guys, you know, and they're super important, you know, and they're the heart of the business, the kitchen and the, you know, my front of the house people. And I'm just, you know, just there's just so much to it.
Let's talk about just the sheer stupidity of the state's approach here. I'll be blunt about this.
Yeah, no, I love it.
Like you said, if you build something that is a tent with 2x4s and tarps that's completely flapped in, they say that's okay. But at the railroad pub, I've seen it, Nick. You have huge garage doors that roll up that have, you know, crosswind blowing through and moving out if there were any contaminants and all of that. And that's not allowed. And business owners have to be pragmatic. I mean, you have to make decisions based on facts and truth and data and projections. It's got to be impossible to deal with a state that says a tarped-in tent is okay and huge garage door being open is not.
Yeah, I don't know where they're, you know, they got all these smart people, these scientists, and they don't even have a, you know, something in place saying, hey, you have, you know, 100 square feet on each side of your opening to be allowed to consider it outside seating. It's just like it's just a show, you know. It's like, yeah, throw up a tarp and a couple 2x4s and you're good to go, you know. Instead, I have a solid structure. I mean, I have 5 garage doors that are like, you know, way beyond what I would need for airflow. I'm pretty confident I only need 1 garage door open on both sides.
Like, right.
And yeah. I mean, I had the news guy here from Q13, great guy. And I showed him, we opened the doors up. I had all 5 open. And then I shut a couple just to show him how much air comes through here. And, you know, it must not be enough. I didn't even I got a letter.
Before you get to that, let me correct one thing you said. You said the state has a bunch of smart guys and scientists. I am going to disagree with you passionately on both counts. I don't think any of this is being driven by science, and I don't think there are particularly smart people in charge. I think that right now this is about control. Whether it makes sense or not, for reasons that, you know, we can debate, I have my theories that I've stated on the air. They just want to control people like you, business owners, job creators, taxpayers, and I find it reprehensible, Nick.
Sure. Yeah, and I when I mean a bunch of smart people, I mean you would think, right? You would think that they'd have a math equation for this. You know, I barely passed high school. You know, I went to public high school, you know, and you know, it just comes down to common sense, you know, and I get, you know, what's funny is I was on the news with Cairo, Como 4 yesterday, and like, they were awesome people. But what was weird is in the middle of our interview, L&I calls them, and I'm like, they don't have the nerve to call me and tell me, you know, any helpful information. They just send me a letter, but they haven't, they have enough to call the news, you know. What are they scared? I mean, why would they call the news company, not me, you know?
The media is all too often. And although I think our local media has done a good job, I think they're, you know, they like spotlighting businesses like you. I like spotlighting businesses like you, because to me, Nick, this is like the ultimate human drama of people who have put their lifeblood. I mean, you tell me you barely graduated from high school and now you have 70 employees. It sounds to me like you are the American dream. And when I say this is such an important story, it's because it's the story of people like you and the American dream against a government that is making no sense and trying to crush people like you.
Right. You know, and you know, when I opened up the train wreck 7 years, or sorry, 12 years ago, you know, I had to, you know, I had to, you know, take money out of my, borrow money against my house. I took my 401k out. I maxed out like 7 credit cards. You know, I did everything I could to open that place up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, you're hoping to get rewarded, you know, and when you get rewarded, you know, you deserve it. And, you know, and I also, I've had great employees to put me where I'm at too. It's not like I just, you know what I'm doing. It's just more finding the good people to,
yeah, yep,
to keep it going. But it really makes my job hard when they keep shutting us down like this, you know?
Well, later this afternoon, in less than a couple hours, Jay Inslee has a press conference, and I'm hoping he'll give some clarity to restaurant owners like you a little bit later today.
Sure. You hope if he plans on shutting us down, he just shuts us down and gives us a week of notice and doesn't wait till Friday like he normally does and say, oh, I'm shutting everything down on Monday. You know, it's like, just goes back to the science that they have. It's like, you know, where's the number where it's just like, hey, if you guys reach, you know, below 1,000 cases or whatever it is, you can, we're going to open the doors back up. But they don't say that, you know, they don't have anything that, they don't want to tell us that, you know, it's an agenda. It's all political.
It's about control.
You know?
It's about control. Absolutely. All right. Well, while you are open, people should go and patronize you guys. Get up there to Burlington, the Railroad Pub and Pizza, because I meant what I said. This is about the American dream versus a government that bizarrely is trying to crush it. Nick,
sure.
Let's stay in touch. I wish you all
okay.
the best.
Okay, I appreciate your time. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, thanks for coming on with me. Nick Crandall, the owner of the Railroad Pub and Pizza in Burlington. Love to know your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. There's a rather shocking story that our news partners, Channel 7, did. The flu season is the lowest in recorded history. While we have the pandemic swirling around us, doctors say that the flu has essentially disappeared around here. Gary Horker was the reporter on the case for Channel 7. And the doctors he talked to, I mean, they are taking it to the extreme. They are saying the flu has disappeared.
Some doctors say it's because we're all used to wearing a mask and we're staying away from other people. But others theorize it's because so many of us are getting flu shots this year. But any way you cut it, doctors say there are virtually no flu cases at all this season, which they call one of the great mysterious vanishing acts of a virus doctors have ever seen.
Did you get a flu shot this year, Nicole?
No, you know, we usually get it at work, and I didn't get it at work, obviously, this year, and so I haven't gone to get it. It wasn't purposefully. I just didn't do it yet. And,
but it doesn't cost you anything if you. My wife and I went to a local pharmacy. It doesn't cost you anything to go and get it. Just,
I don't know. I'm not against it. I just didn't do it. I don't know. I'm home all the time. But I will say I do know a few people that have had the flu. I know one family in particular that they all had the flu. They all went and got tested for COVID, tested negative, so they just got sent home. So they didn't test them for the flu. And I think that is part of the story that is not being told, is that everybody is staying home. You go and get tested at a drive-thru or whatever for COVID. You get a negative to COVID, and you just stay home and recover from the flu. So I think that more people have the flu than we might know have the flu.
They say it's just flu. Sean, do you get the flu shot every year when they offer it at work?
Yeah, I do. I do, yeah. And this year, you know, like Nicole was saying, we didn't have that on site in building here. So I've been just neglecting and forgetting to get my flu shot at like any sort of Bartels or whatever. And now flu season's just about over. So, you know.
Yeah, no, I get the flu shot, but according to the statistics, Cairo 7, the lowest numbers in recorded history, last year, the CDC recorded 38 million cases of the flu in America. 22,000 people died from the flu. And they say in the last several months in Washington state, there have been zero documented deaths because of the flu. They talked to Dr. Paul Pottinger, a researcher at the University of Washington.
Somehow we decided to shoo the flu. I don't know that we did it on purpose. I'm not sure we can take credit for it. It's one of the great mysteries of public health and epidemiology is where is the influenza?
It's gone. It's gone, I tell you.
Cases were very high and even raging in some places around our state. And then quite suddenly, around March 20th, when we were all locked down for the first time, those high flu numbers dropped straight down to nearly zero, and they just stayed that way. People stopped getting sick with the flu from then until now.
I just don't believe it. I don't believe it at all.
Well, I believe that they've taken a lot of cases of the flu that we get every single year, and they've called it COVID this year.
Right. I think that they just haven't tested the same for flu, and people are – I have some friends that work in the hospital. I have nurse friends, and I heard in December there was quite a few flu deaths. So I'm not sure where that's coming from or where that stat is coming from. And then, of course, it always drops down in March and April because it's spring and the number always drops. But also people were terrified to leave their house. We had scared them all into staying home. So nobody left their house even to get tested. At that point, you didn't even have COVID testing as readily available. So people just recovered.
My fear is that just as they've dummied up the death numbers by their own admission now, just as they've exaggerated the death numbers from COVID, I just wonder if they have taken, you know, hundreds of thousands of cases of the flu, maybe millions of cases of the flu, and every one of them, they're just saying, it's COVID-19. And that's why we have zero, because I don't believe that we have zero flu deaths. In this region. I think that they're reclassifying them for, again, power, control. It doesn't make any sense that we go from 38 million cases last year to pretty much zero this year. That doesn't make any sense at all. So I fear they're still cooking the books when it comes to COVID. Love to hear your thoughts, and you can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show.